He is the new voice of talk radio, Alexander Danilov.
Yes, folks, that is me. Welcome back to Solutionsology Radio for part two of my conversation with Carmine Gallo, the author of many books, including Talk Like TED, which we spoke about last time in a fantastic interview, where I monopolized more of Carmine's night than I initially anticipated, but I loved the topic so much. So we ended up doing a part two on his newest book, which is A Storyteller's Secret, which is a follow-up to Talk Like TED. And Carmine, I'm so happy to have you back on the show to talk about this.
Alex, a repeat performance, man. Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, great stories need to be told, and they need to be told in as many places as possible. And this book and the origin of this book has a great story to tell. So before we move on to all the great content that's in the book and all the stuff you highlight, let's talk about, again, the origin and the purpose behind The Storyteller's Secret.
Well, I believe that storytelling is a skill that a lot of people don't appreciate, especially in business today, even though it's a skill that goes back hundreds of thousands of years. It's in our DNA. And yet, so many people don't understand that facts alone are not enough. You have to do storytelling. And that's not my original idea. That was actually told to me by Vinod Khosla, who's a billionaire venture capitalist. And it was interesting because I'd written Talk Like TED, which is about the TED conference, TED-style presentations. And Vinod Khosla invited me to attend and speak at one of his major conferences for a lot of the portfolio companies that he invests in. And I got to tell you, Alex, it was one of those heady experiences where I turn to my left and there's Bill Gates or Sergey Brin and Larry Page or the former Prime Minister of England, Tony Blair. I mean, they're all there. We're just at a cocktail party. It's just bizarre stuff. And so I started to feel a little, you know, not insecure, but questioning, what am I doing here?
It is a little intimidating.
I'm not a billionaire philanthropist or anything like that. And then he got up there and he said, and he told his portfolio CEOs, Vinod Khosla said, all of you are brilliant, which is why I invest in you, but you have to learn how to tell a story. And that was the point. Yeah, so that gave me a lot of not only confidence, but I realized, oh my gosh, that's what communication is. That when we say that someone is a great communicator, they're typically a good storyteller because they use the components of narrative to explain and to simplify and to engage with their audiences when you pitch. The best communicators, Alex, are storytellers. That's what we've been trying to do. We just don't use the term. We don't call ourselves storytellers, but that's what we do in business.
Oh, it has a negative connotation.
Time. Yeah.
Yep. There's a negative connotation, unfortunately, around storytelling.
Well, there is a little bit, yeah. I mean, because storytelling, it's like you're telling tales. But I've got to tell you, there isn't one venture capitalist who I've talked to, and I'm talking about billionaires, Alex. Michael Moritz, the CEO, the partner at Sequoia Capital, who first invested in Google, says the same thing about storytelling. Richard Branson, not too long ago, just a few weeks ago, wrote a blog post. If you want to be a successful entrepreneur, you have to be a great storyteller. Now, that was too late to put in my book because my book was put to bed a few months ago. But you start seeing a trend here, Alex. If all of these billionaires are saying that storytelling is an underappreciated skill, then maybe the rest of us ought to think about it for a while and start incorporating some of those elements into our business pitches.
And a lot of that actually it comes down to the story that we, as you wrote here, chapter 3 in the book, page 28 for those keeping score at home, the story you choose to tell yourself and some of the things that so many people tell themselves are negative in nature. Terrible giving presentations, nobody wants to listen to me, I'm boring, which is not something as a radio show host you ever want to tell yourself, but it's not something you should ever tell yourself whether you're a radio show host or not, whether you're a businessman or not, because that's you're going into something with the negative sense that you can't accomplish anything by opening your mouth. And that's something that we've been given as a gift, whether you believe in God or not, you know, we have that gift to be able to speak, be able to think, be able to rationalize what we're about to say. And that's something that no other species has, at least none that we know of. This is a very special thing. So let's get into the psyche of ourselves and why we, instead of psyching ourselves up, we beat ourselves down.
Well, isn't it interesting that we talk ourselves out of it?
Yep.
We talk ourselves
exactly.
out of being our best.
We get presentation talk ourselves out. Yep.
It is wild, but one of the things that I learned while I was researching The Storyteller's Secret, and thank you so much for I'm glad you like it. One of the mm-hmm. things I learned is that all of these great communicators, these great storytellers in business, were at one point very insecure about their skills. In fact, when we talk about public speaking, for example, they were terrified of public speaking, and they're very open in acknowledging that. I can name Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett dropped out of a Dale Carnegie public speaking course because he didn't believe in himself. He dropped out of a public speaking course because he was too afraid to public speak. Barbara Corcoran, the Shark Tank.
Yep, she's been on the show.
Yeah, she's been on the show. She was paralyzed. She had a paralyzing fear of public speaking. So what I learned, and Richard Branson too. So what I learned is that early on in all of their careers, public speakers and great communicators and great leaders are not made. They're not born. They're made. And they make themselves great by reframing the story they tell themselves, their own internal narrative. They have to start believing in them, in themselves first. And one of the great chapters in my book, and it is not a religious book by any means, but one of the most inspiring stories I've heard, and a person who I've interviewed two times now, is a pastor, very famous pastor named Joel Osteen. In fact, Joel Osteen was on the cover of Success magazine last month, so he is sort of crossing over, you know, into more motivational. But he's a worldwide famous pastor. And I spoke to him twice, and I remember sitting at a stadium, because he fills stadiums now. Imagine that. Imagine walking out in front of 50,000 people, and you have to do public speaking for 2 hours. That's pretty tough. That's a tough crowd.
That's
okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
15 years ago, he said, Carmine, I couldn't even walk on stage without shaking terribly. It took me a year to get over a terrifying fear of public speaking. And now he speaks to 50,000 people in a stadium. And I said, Joel, how did you do it? He said, Carmine, it's all about how you talk to yourself. You know, if you tell yourself that nobody wants to hear me and I'm a terrible speaker and I'm never going to be good and I don't have anything to share, the words you speak to yourself is what's going to come back to you. And then that opened up my eyes, Alex. It really did. And I realized it, with all of these people who I've interviewed or who I've written about, it all comes back to reframing the internal story, which is why I say the story you tell yourself about who you are and your ability to inspire other people is the most important story of all.
Mm-hmm. And that's straight from page 29. Inspiring storytellers are not always born. They're made, and they make themselves great by reframing the story they tell themselves. Amazing stuff, obviously, here. Talking to Carmine Gallo, part two of our conversation, following up on the interview that we had several weeks, I guess it was a couple months ago, when we talked about Talk Like TED, which is one of the best books, and I listened to it on audio, one of the best books I've ever listened to. And if I read the whole thing fully, I would say it's one of the best books I've ever read, because there's so much in there that made me stop and say, you know what? How can I incorporate this? That's really cool. I've been saying this too, and now this guy's saying it, so it's all coming together. It's all kind of coalescing around one central image, one central message, and that's being able to tell a story effectively and not tell tales, but tell the beauty of something and finding something. Going back to the next chapter on page 39, the stories have the power to shape our lives and the lives of our listeners, and not just the listeners listening tonight, Carmine obviously, but people listening. You mentioned something great. We talk ourselves, we pitch ourselves on opting out of speaking to other people, but we refuse to do the opposite, which is the most, you know, like anything else, it seems the most intuitive thing that we should be doing is what we're not doing.
It's fascinating to me, and in part of the research, I really love neuroscience, and I'm a real mm-hmm. communication geek, okay? You know, some people are computer geeks or video game geeks. I'm a communication geek. So I'm always trying to learn more about communication. One of the most interesting, to me, I don't know if it's boring to anybody else, so I'll keep it short, but this whole idea of the fact that storytelling is in our DNA, it started 400,000 years ago, when man created fire for the first time and actually started having campfires. The campfires extended the day. And so after hunting and gathering all day, they started telling stories. And storytelling, according to anthropologists in recent papers, was a significant milestone in human development. So think about Alex, we're doing the same today. Richard Branson, true story, Richard Branson gathers his team around a campfire for the express interest of telling stories, because he said storytelling is our best way of coming up with new ideas. Alex, we were doing that 400,000 years ago. We haven't changed. And yet in a business presentation, think about going for a job interview. Think about delivering a business presentation, or this whole concept is about pitching ideas. How do you get your ideas to stick? Why do some ideas catch on and others don't? That's the subtitle to the book. Think about what we do in business. We don't make emotional connections. We don't tell stories. It's all facts and figures and data and tables and charts. It's the boring stuff. It's the stuff that's necessary, but it's not going to make emotional connections with people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And through business, obviously, you have to be able to connect with people. And a lot of times there's a deeper message behind it. So chapter 7, you start talking about Howard Schultz and the amazing transformation that he's done in really transforming the nation and the world into coffee drinkers and creating a lifestyle around it, because they create a message and a story behind everything. And you can feel it when you go in there. No matter how long the line is, people are going to wait for it. And that's the mark of a great business. But before that, people have to be able to explain to other people why you're doing that, and they actually evangelize for what that is. No matter if you're spending $7 for a latte or whatever it might be, $5 for a Java chip, which used to be my favorite before I started going dairy-free, but that's a different conversation. But he was able to craft a wonderful message on why people should be drinking coffee as a lifestyle and not as something that we do after dinner or before we head out to drive after a wedding, we get back on the road, stuff like that. There's something else behind that. So let's talk about Howard Schultz and the amazing story of Starbucks.
Well, one interesting thing about Howard Schultz, okay, you brought up Schultz. I think he's a fantastic storyteller. Let me ask you a question. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Do you know the story of Howard Schultz? Do you know his origins?
I know
where he started.
I know bits and pieces of it. He was not rich.
Was he rich? He was not rich, okay. How poor was he, do you know?
That I don't know. I know he tells that story a lot, but unfortunately I don't know enough of it. So.
No, but that's the point, right? He tells that story. You've heard the story. The story is he grew up in a housing project. That's the one I mean. Yeah. I'm sure you've heard that one. So
he grew up
in a housing project in Brooklyn. And the reason why you know that story and you've heard that story is because he tells the story all the time. He's very authentic. He's open about telling the story of struggle and triumph. Mm-hmm. And that is why, Alex, all of our listeners today, that's why they love movies that have a happy ending. We're actually wired for a happy ending. Mm-hmm. That's another big aha from my research. I didn't realize that we're actually wired for that. There's a reason why we like happy endings, because we have to find meaning in struggle. So when we hear stories from like Howard Schultz, or I bet you know the Tony Robbins story, about his washing his dishes in a 400-square-foot studio apartment. Mm-hmm. He had to wash the dishes in the bathtub because he couldn't afford a kitchen, that kind of stuff. There's a reason why we remember those stories, because we crave stories of struggle and triumph. And now, coming back to your main point about Howard Schultz, Howard Schultz tells that story all the time about how he grew up in the housing projects and how his father, Fred, broke his ankle at work, and it was a sad job too. I mean, it was like delivering diapers, that type of thing. But he broke his ankle. He couldn't work. They didn't have health insurance. They didn't have income. They didn't have a safety net, which is why today Starbucks is more than coffee. It's about elevating employees. It's about elevating the community. That's why Howard Schultz was one of the first companies to offer full-time health benefits for part-time workers, full health benefit. That's why he is hiring 10,000 veterans. That's why he's giving them, paying for college education, that type of thing, because he never had that growing up. But it doesn't mean all of those initiatives don't mean anything unless you understand the motivation behind it, and that motivation is tied to a story.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Actually, that was chapter 7, and it slipped my mind completely, but you did outline it clearly there. And one of the stories that comes to mind when you tell the stories of Tony Robbins, you talk about Howard Schultz and so many other great business leaders out there, is the story of Papa John's. And that whole story is, he started in the broom closet, and that's how he started his empire, 25,000 plus franchises. And it's just amazing some of the stories that we tell. And that
Whole
one I don't
Foods,
hear as
Whole
much.
Foods the same. Yep. I mean, all of these, a lot of these famous brands that I talk about, not only the brands, but the business leaders, it's amazing. Do you know that every single chapter, and I think there's like 35, 37 chapters in the book, every single chapter focuses on a great storyteller in business today. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them had a very, very difficult upbringing. I mean, they were close to homelessness or no education, or they failed many, many times, but they embrace their adversity. They embrace it, and they celebrate it. Whereas most of us, we shy away from that kind of stuff, don't we? Because, you know, it's a little too vulnerable. And yet when you talk to these billionaires and millionaires who have accomplished great successes in their life and who are inspiring communicators, more often than not, they're very open about their failures in the past. It's interesting.
Yep. Yeah, and I talk a lot about failures when I have business leaders on my show, even politicians, even though I haven't had them on in a while. When I had guys like Jeff Hoffman, the founder of Priceline, and so many others, I like to talk about and focus on the failures for a particular reason, not because it makes anybody feel good if they have a low self-esteem, but because that's where we learn. I was actually talking to somebody about this today, Carmine. It's sometimes when we're climbing the ladder of success and we're ascending so much, we forget to look down because we're trained not to look down when we're climbing up a mountain, climbing up the ladder. Don't look down, never look down. But sometimes that's where you learn, and maybe you need to look down to remember how high up you are. And that's something that it just hit me today. I'm like, wow, that's very powerful. But
let me turn the table. Let me turn the tables on you. Okay. You're always asking all these great leaders who you interview and talk to, you're asking them about their failures, right? And why? Because you learn from their failures. But aren't they telling you a story?
Yep,
you're asking
story.
Them to tell you a story. You're asking them to tell you a story of failure. You see, so it all actually does come back to storytelling. I like to say that storytelling is not something we do. Storytelling is who we are. It's ingrained in our DNA. We haven't labeled it, but that's what we're doing.
Yep, absolutely. Story is king, as you mentioned later on in the book, when you start talking about, and you even include Frozen in here, and Elsa's badass song is a section that's titled, which is one of the most famous movies of all time. Now, you can't go anywhere. You can't go a day without seeing something Frozen related, a parody of it.
Oh, I've got two daughters. I can name every song.
Yeah,
you
kind of
want to hear it, but I can say
no, it's obligatory. You have to put this section in the book. But the thing I want to end off on is charity and charitable organizations and how they tell stories. We see the issues going on with the Wounded Warriors Project, which is something I'm not proud to have been right about so many years ago when I stopped donating, but I felt something wrong about it. But the story they were telling was so powerful that so many people got into it and bought into it without doing research on it because the cause was felt so just. In this book, in chapter 31, you talk about the ALS, the whole movement of what happened, the Ice Bucket Challenge swept the nation. You talk about something that was barely ever talked about, but obviously something chronic, not an epidemic, but something that affects a lot of people, enough people for us to be concerned about it. But something like this swept the nation and the world into something that became literally a global movement, and people were donating in record numbers. I mean, ALS never got so much funding before.
It advanced the progress we're making on ALS. That one event actually advanced the progress we're making.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. So let's talk about that particular part and how the story was told and how it became what it became, because there are a lot of moving parts, obviously, but the Ice Bucket Challenge is something that I don't think you could recreate it like that. You can't just say, you know, now it's going to be a Gatorade challenge or it's going to be slam dunk challenge. This was a once in a lifetime thing, I believe, for ALS.
Sure.
Now something else has to be done. So let's talk about this particular one, because I think this was a great story.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I think it was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and I did dedicate a full chapter to it. It is not the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, not necessarily something that we can replicate. But what was interesting to me is that it all had to do with story. And here's the reason. And I didn't even think about it at the time. I did it myself. I'm like, hey, Ice Bucket Challenge. You know, I didn't think about what was going on. I spoke at a conference. It was in Texas. And Nancy Frates was there. And I didn't know who she was. I didn't even, like, put two and two together. She came up to me, and she goes, I'm from Massachusetts. Pete Frates is my son. He's the one, the baseball player, who kind of triggered the Ice Bucket Challenge. He was the guy who got ALS. He was a very well-known college baseball player. And then something happened during just an interleague city baseball game where he got hit by a fastball and his wrist went limp, but it never really returned. It never came back. And this guy was so strong and so heroic that months later, when they diagnosed him with ALS and they said there is no cure, he went home that night and he told his mother, Nancy, who I met, he said, I'm going to get this in front of Bill Gates. Which he eventually did. Bill Gates did take the Ice Bucket Challenge. And this guy is like a hero. I mean, he's a storyteller. And he said, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to be the face of ALS, and I'm going to tell this story. So the reason why the Ice Bucket Challenge took off is not because somebody said, you know, there's X millions of Americans who suffer from ALS every year, and you should donate. That's not why we donated. We donated because there was a face to the cause. And Nancy told me some real interesting stuff that's never been said, that Pete Frates was a real communicator in high school and even in elementary school. He was a great storyteller, a great communicator. So it just happened by coincidence that this happened to him, and he became the face of ALS until he lost his voice. He actually lost his voice, and now he's confined to a wheelchair. But he's still writing. You know, he's still writing using technical tools. But the whole point, and I have another chapter of, like, the I call it the sideways, you know, the sideways chapter. How did Pinot Noir, you know, become such a boom after the movie Sideways? All of these things are triggered not by data or numbers. They're triggered by stories. And we don't always put those two together, but they're always triggered by stories. So what I say is that facts do not trigger movements. Stories do. Facts never triggered a movement. It's always a story. You have to have a face. You've got to see a face behind the cause.
And I think it's appropriate to leave off and to end our conversation with the quote from Pete Frates that you put on page 186 to open up the chapter. What an amazing opportunity we have to change the world, and change the world they did. As you mentioned, that they advanced the cause of ALS and the research of it. $100 million raised during that time, more than 30 times year-over-year contribution. So it's just an amazing thing. Again, once in a lifetime, in my opinion. If we see it again, that would be great too, because something we can study and learn from for sure.
It is, Alex. But the big lesson is, if you're out there trying to raise money for any cause, okay, or triggering more of a movement behind a cause, you have to put a face to the cause. It's numbers alone don't do it.
Agreed. Okay. And at the heart of everything that we do, at the heart of them, especially since we're in the election season, major election season, elections every year, but major election season with presidencies and some Senate positions, and obviously congressional is every 2 years. In some cases every year, depending on how it falls. But everything that we do, everything that we are exposed to, marketing, all that stuff, it's all comes down to storytelling, and the storyteller's secret does an unbelievable job of putting that at the heart of it and explaining different types. You don't just need to be able to speak it. You mentioned Pete Frates and he's writing. It could be visual, it could be auditory, it could be literary, it doesn't matter. But you cover all that in your book, which is amazing. Once again, the storyteller's secret. The last book we spoke about, which is Talk Like TED. You also have The Apple Experience, The Power of Foursquare, the presentation secrets of Steve Jobs, the innovation secrets of Steve Jobs, and fired them up. Absolutely phenomenal. Great speaking with you as always, Carmine. Congrats on the book. I wish you much success with it. I'm sure you've already sold tons of them. So honored to have a copy myself with your signature on it. This one's staying with me forever.
I love it. Thanks, Alex. Thanks for giving me this platform and the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming on once again, Carmine. Have a great night.